is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us as VOA marks its 80th anniversary today. I'm Yehius Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Our first response is around search and rescue. It's getting people to dry grounds and then making sure that they're protected. This is just the beginning of this crisis.
That was John Roche, who is coordinating relief efforts for Tropical Storm Anna for the Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies in five countries in Southern Africa. Details coming up. Also, Ethiopian Airlines has resumed flying the Boeing 737 MAX jumbo jet. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. In Southern Africa, relief organizations are engaged in efforts to help hundreds of thousands of people affected by Tropical Storm Anna. It hit parts of the region about 2 weeks ago. Torrential rains and strong winds have since caused floods and landslides, killing scores of people. Darren Taylor reports.
Anna has devastated parts of Madagascar, Malawi, Mozambique, Zambia, and Zimbabwe.
We are talking now across the five countries. I mean, more than a million people probably affected by this in different ways.
John Roche is coordinating relief efforts for the Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies. He says 500,000 people in Malawi alone have suffered significant damage to their livelihoods, with 50,000 people now in displacement camps.
We have several hundreds of households in Zimbabwe, and it's the same if you go to Mozambique. And this is unfolding, you know, as our first response is around search and rescue. It's getting people to dry grounds and then making sure that they're protected. This is just the beginning of this crisis.
Meteorologist at the University of Pretoria in South Africa, Professor Liesl Dyson, says more storms could be on the way soon.
It's quite late in the season for the first tropical cyclone in the Indian Ocean to occur. So that's quite significant. There's already another storm, Sarai, over the Indian Ocean. Some of the projections show that this storm may also move into the Mozambique Channel, but it's still very uncertain exactly what the path of the storm will be. But this time of the year is tropical cyclone season.
Roche says now that the rains eased in some areas and the floodwaters are receding, it's time to assess the full extent of the damage.
People's crops, their foods, livelihoods, all affected. So this is not something short term. This is going to be with us for the next several months. And the amount of infrastructure that has been destroyed, I mean, roads are cut off, bridges have been destroyed, and the whole livelihoods. And all of this in the backdrop of the pandemic, which is also our biggest concern.
Roche says COVID-19 outbreaks could worsen the crisis, given that many people are packed closely together in tents. He says his organization is concerned that the fallout from Storm Anna will be bigger than initially thought.
Now, as the teams come back from the front line, we realize the extent of what we face, and we will be appealing for funds in the next few days. Obviously, in the backdrop of a pandemic, we know resources are tight, but this is going to potentially be serious. So obviously, we will be...
Dyson says Southern Africa would be hit by more storms every summer if it wasn't for the island of Madagascar, which acts as a buffer, protecting the region. She says the storms sometimes still spill over into South Africa and that this may happen more in the future.
There's research that has been done by our colleagues at Wits University that has indicated that the cyclones have a tendency to come further south. Now, if this is true, then we are expected to get more cyclones in a changing climate.
Dyson can't say for sure how Southwest Indian Ocean storm seasons are going to play out in the years to come. She's certain, however, that Madagascar and Mozambique will continue bearing the brunt. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, warns 3 years of successive drought in Ethiopia's lowland regions of Afar, Oromia, the southern nations, and Somalia is threatening the lives and livelihoods of millions of people. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Failed rains over the past 3 years have dried up water wells, killing livestock and crops, pushing hundreds of thousands of children and their families over the edge. UNICEF predicts 6.8 million people will need life-saving humanitarian aid by mid-March. It warns conditions could get even worse if the hoped-for rainy season in April does not come. Speaking from the capital, Addis Ababa, UNICEF representative in Ethiopia, Gianfranco Rotigliano, says the impact of acute food and water shortages already is visible, especially in the two most affected regions, Somali and Oromia.
We have already some more than 220,000 children, 100,000 pregnant or lactating women that need urgent nutrition support. In the regions, the rate of acute malnutrition is already at 20%, which is well above the rate that we have in global emergencies, which is estimated to 15%.
UNICEF estimates 850,000 children across the four regions will be severely malnourished this year due to conflict, drought, and a poor economy. Rotigliano says nutrition centers must be urgently improved so acutely malnourished children can be quickly admitted and treated correctly.
All of that is something that should be done within the next 2-3 weeks. So it is extremely urgent that we move on swiftly and rapidly, and we not wait for the usual situation in which we see, you know, the devastating effect of famine and all of that.
UNICEF says more than 155,000 children in Somali and Oromia regions have dropped out of school to help find and fetch water in the parched landscape for their families and cattle. It warns children who are out of school are at risk of exploitation. The Children's Agency is appealing for nearly $32 million to provide life-saving support to more than 2 million people in the four lowland regions over the next 6 months. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Ethiopian Airlines has resumed flying the Boeing 737 MAX jumbo jet for the first time since a crash nearly 3 years ago that forced regulators to ground the fleet globally. In March 2019, a flight to Nairobi crashed in a field 6 minutes after takeoff from Ethiopia's capital Addis Ababa, killing all 157 passengers and crew. 5 months earlier, the same model crashed in Indonesia, killing 189 people. The accidents exposed a problem with the system and the plane. The grounding cost Boeing some $20 billion and triggered court cases that exposed shortcomings with the certification process. In a statement, Ethiopian Airlines says the decision to resume the 737 MAX flights came after intense recertification by regulators in the United States, the European Union, China, and Ethiopia. Ethiopian Airlines had planned a 4-hour scenic flight to Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania today, but bad weather forced a shift to a less picturesque route. Airline and Boeing representatives were on board along with U.S. Ambassador to Ethiopia, Gita Passi. South Africa has urged all foreign nationals to make sure they're counted during the national census next month. The government says everyone will be counted, including illegal immigrants. Many foreigners have expressed worries because anti-immigrant groups, sometimes accompanied by police, have started chasing them away in some places. Tsoko Malo reports from Johannesburg.
Deputy Minister in the Presidency, Tembisi Weya, told reporters that everyone in the country from the 3rd to the 28th of February must be accounted for. The more than 100 questions include disclosing if they are in South Africa legally.
For you as South Africans and everybody in South Africa is to ensure that you become as transparent as possible so that the data which they're going to collect is a true reflection of what is happening in our country.
Most citizens will be physically counted by teams sent out throughout the country. Those who want to be counted by phone will have to register with the Office of the Statistician General. A provision will be made for those who reply online. Statistician General Rusenga Maluleke told reporters no excuse will be allowed as the government is determined to count everyone, including visitors and those who will be in transit during this period.
Our field workers will be out there to reach out to everyone who finds themselves within the borders of South Africa. There will be questions that will be asked. I'm in South Africa, I don't know my legal status in South Africa, so I don't want to be counted. Get counted, legal or illegal.
Many foreign nationals have expressed reservations. One Zimbabwean who declined to be identified says they fear such information will end up in the hands of the anti-immigrants groups that are hunting for foreigners and asking them to leave the country or their employers.
We don't know where our data is going to. As it is now, there is looming xenophobia. Political parties are saying that foreigners must go. So we don't know. Maybe we give our data and they will track us where we are. So it's very difficult for us to participate as foreigners.
The government says the information gathered will be used for census purposes only, nothing else. But foreign nationals are living in fear amid rising anti-immigrant sentiments. A few political parties have also launched campaigns to have illegal foreigners give up their jobs and be deported. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Thousands of Southern African ex-miners are staking claims on a fund of unclaimed benefits from their former employers that was secured by a successful class action lawsuit. Arigando gives us more on the story.
In 2019, the South African High Court approved a US$328 million settlement of a class action suit against six mining groups, Africa Rainbow Minerals, Anglo-American South Africa, Anglo Gold Ashanti, Goldfields, Harmony and Sibanye Stillwater. The miners from Botswana, Lesotho, Mozambique, Eswatini, Zambia, Malawi, South Africa, Namibia and Zimbabwe and other countries were working under the auspices of the Witwatersrand Native Labour Association, WENELA. Now they are poised to benefit from the settlement, which provides for mine workers who contracted silicosis or pulmonary tuberculosis during or after their employment from 1965 up to 2019. The Chiamiso Trust was set up to administer the fund for those who contracted silicosis, were exposed to silica dust, contracted tuberculosis, and the dependents of those who died. Applications are being accepted for 12 years. The mine workers are represented by the Southern African Miners Association, SAMA. VOA reached out to the organization's coordinator, Vamajele, who says the resolution of the case was long in coming.
We had a case that began in 2012 and which was finalized in 2019 with regards to TB and silicosis, and which is actually affecting most of the mine workers who worked in the gold mine. And to date, Tsiamiso Trust is trying to reach out to ex-mine workers in the region, which means in all of the eight countries where mine workers or migrant mine workers were recruited within a period of 1965 to 2019. And should any ex-mine worker have worked in those six gold mining companies or in their shafts, then that is a potential claimant.
Jele says there's huge work that needs to be done at the country level to ensure that the ex-workers are benefiting from the process. Lungele Mkwananzi of the Zimbabwean affiliate of SAMA says the national database currently has 8,000 names from a pool estimated at 30,000 former miners and their dependents. Applicants need to provide evidence that they are qualified. Observers say history shows the key role of migrant workers in building the South African economy. Ashambata Lewanika of Zambia says it predates 1965 as per the class action suit.
we have to look at it outside the confines of colonial boundaries, and we have to look at the totality of the migrant labor economy in southern Central Africa before some of these post-colonial borders were created. The main operations here predate the creation of Zambia. The main operations here were with Barossa indigenous government authority negotiating with the agents of Wenela, and therefore that, I think, for clarity's sake, that should be made clear.
Political analyst Effie Nwe says there's no doubt that the development that took place in South Africa, particularly powered by the mining industry, was to a large extent due to the migrant labor in the form of Wenela miners.
These are people who sacrificed immensely, many of whom died in the mining accidents and so forth, to get the gold out and power the South African economy, create jobs downstream and in other industries.
Lewanika and others want the process to be thorough and to leave no one out. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
Separatist rebels killed 4 Senegalese soldiers and captured 7 during a clash on the border with the Gambia last week. The soldiers are part of a peacekeeping mission from the West Africa bloc ECOWAS in the Gambia. The rebels, according to the French news agency AFP, are from the Movement of Democratic Forces of Casamance. They are behind a low-intensity breakaway conflict in Senegal's southern region of Casamance that dates back to 1982 and has claimed several thousand lives. Despite its economic woes, Zimbabwe has done better than other southern African countries in the fight against COVID-19, largely thanks to vaccination donations from China and other Asian countries. The latest 10 million doses from China will allow Zimbabwe to do booster shots. From Harare, reporter Kuzai Zanwashi examines the benefits and challenges of Zimbabwe's Look East policy.
When Western sanctions stung Zimbabwe under long-term ruler Robert Mugabe, its foreign policy shifted to building relations with China and other Asian countries. With Mugabe gone and attempts to re-engage the West failing, the country continues to face East. Political analyst Rashid Mukundu says Zimbabwe has fought a good fight in this pandemic because of the support from the East.
The relationship between the Zimbabwean government and the Chinese government is fraught with contradictions. First, we certainly have to thank the Chinese government for the vaccine donations at a time that the global West has been inward looking in terms of the supply of vaccines to the global South, especially Africa, and in which our governments do not have as much resources to buy enough vaccines.
Mukundu says Chinese goodwill comes at a cost.
The Chinese have been generous in that regard, but behind the generosity, obviously, is a geopolitical strategy to entangle African governments into a more closer relationship with the Chinese government. And we see this in Zimbabwe, where the Chinese businesses have an upper hand in terms of acquiring licenses for mining, for agricultural ventures, for property development, sometimes flouting national regulations around environmental management, sometimes flouting council regulations on construction. And this speaks to the growing political clout of the Chinese business and the fact that our governments, which have bad relations with the rest of the world, are more reliant on the Chinese for cheap loans, more reliant on the Chinese for donations and grants.
Shaw Kasenye is with a non-profit called Center for Natural Resources Governance, an organization that has been monitoring Chinese businesses' activities in the extraction industries such as mining. He says labor abuses by Chinese companies and exploitative business practices that do not benefit communities are far too common.
They are not an isolated issues around the world, but if you go wherever the Chinese are, you hear people complaining about Chinese. You go to Mutoko where black granite is being mined. People are complaining that the Chinese, they are not contributing to the economic development of the areas. They are not contributing to the infrastructure development of these areas.
Mukundu says the Chinese investment, like any other investment in the country, is welcome but should come with mutual benefits and respect for the laws of the land. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinamashe from Harare.
Botswana, with the world's fourth highest HIV prevalence, is facing a condom shortage due to irregular supplies from overseas manufacturers, raising fears about the impact on HIV prevention programs. From Habrone, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
The Minister of Health spokesperson Christopher Nyanga says while the country faces a condom shortage, the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, delivered nearly 1.3 million in December and have been distributed throughout the country. He says USAID has pledged a total of 18 million to be delivered in batches. Botswana receives its bulk of condom supplies from Malaysia, but manufacturers have been affected by COVID-19 travel restrictions and lockdowns. HIV activists like Bono Sehadimo argue the shortage could reverse gains made.
As much as we are trying to do whatever it takes to fight HIV, most of what we tell people is to use protection. So when we ask people to use protection, then it happens that the protection you're talking about is not enough. It's going to affect the issue of fighting this HIV. We will have issues of reinfections. We will have issues of new infections due to unprotected sex.
She says the shortages mean public education on HIV prevention has to be redoubled.
The only thing that we can do for now is doing more health education on behavioral change. Once we let people know about the shortage of those condoms, then they will know what to do regarding their own health. If we encourage them to make sure that despite the shortage of condoms, but they have to know that HIV is real and it is there.
Tosh Bega, director of sex workers organization Sisonge, says the shortage affects other sexual health programs.
The idea is that by 2030 we need to end HIV. However, the looming threat that hangs over us is the fact that there is a serious shortage of condoms. This challenge doesn't only affect HIV programming and management, but the sexual reproductive health rights also, and it has serious consequences. For example, an unplugged pregnancies and sexual transmitted infections. Condom shortage undermines the efforts done to combat with the spread of HIV.
The country has been hailed for its HIV prevention programs, with at least 95% of the more than 300,000 positive people on antiretroviral treatment. For VOA, this is Nkondisi Dube in Habrone, Botswana.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abbaru, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America as VOA marks its 80th anniversary today.
Host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, New releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000.